That's interesting. All right. Well, for some reason, my intro didn't intro. What's up with that? All right, Amy, figure out why our intro didn't work there. And usually, right about now, we have what's called the intro. And anyway, kind of throws me off when it doesn't play correctly. Well, I tell you what, guys, fantastic show. My first guest today is the one, the only, Tom Hopkins. Tom Hopkins is one of our regular contributors. He, you know what, we're fortunate enough that he's willing to come on the show and share literally treasures of sales knowledge. And this guy is internationally recognized as the number one sales trainer in the world. I say that because I know Tom personally. And I bought for years before I got to know him, I bought his books, went to his seminars. And when you look at all the other sales trainers around the world, they got their inspiration from Tom Hopkins. Tom Hopkins carries the standard as a master sales trainer and is recognized, as I mentioned, globally as the leading authority on selling techniques and salesmanship. Over 5 million people on five continents have attended Tom's high-energy live seminars. Tom personally conducts 30-plus seminars each year traveling throughout the world. He is the author of 18 books, including How to Master the Art of Selling. This is the pivotal book. Everybody must have this book in their library, which has sold over 1.6 million copies worldwide. His latest book is titled When Buyers Say No, and is receiving phenomenal reviews and from sales professionals and managers across the world. Again, When Buyers Say No is a must-have. Tom Hopkins, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you, Bert. It's always so nice to spend a little time with you. So good. Let's jump right in and give some ideas to these folks.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know what? I want to dive into this because, again, I was mentioning When Buyers Say No, your latest best-selling book, and I know that when you've written a whole book on the subject titled When Buyers Say No, it's something that's important to everybody, right? It's a great read for anybody in sales, but I think it's a great read for anybody in business. Because, you know, there's a lot of people in business, CEOs, who have a sales staff, and sometimes there's a misconnect what the CEO thinks is happening versus what's really happening with the sales staff. But I wanted to ask you this: before buyers say no, they often just stop. They pause. You know, they may be just thinking about the process. They're looking at everything that you just presented to them. And they're not jumping up and down saying yes, but they're not necessarily saying no. So how do you suggest handling what could possibly be an awkward moment in selling, that what a lot of people refer to that, you know, quiet time?
Sure. Well, you know, Bert, any time that you can tell a buyer is processing really what you've said, you need to be prepared to sit quietly and just let it happen. Now, especially new salespeople don't realize that you do have buyers that are very slow decision makers, not really procrastinating, but they do really want to process what's being said. They want to take their time. And if you try to jump in and either ask a question or give additional information, it'll only cause more confusion. And there's a real truth in this next saying, that a confused mind normally has to say no. So the quietness when they're pondering is very, very important. Also, I think you got to prepare for instances when your buyers stop you as they feel some degree of pressure toward going ahead. And they might say something like, you know, Tom, we're not ready to make a decision, or, you know, we don't want to jump into anything. Or they can even say, you know, we're going to take some time and we'll get back to you. Now, when you hear this, you've got to relieve the pressure. And you might use a pressure-relieving statement to relax and try something like this. This will help keep the sales process moving forward. John and Mary, I understand your hesitation. what I'd like to do is just outline our thoughts. Then if it makes sense, we'll go ahead, okay? See, what you've done there, Bert, is nicely said to them, okay, look, we're not going to jump in anything. Let's just put it all kind of down and see how it looks, which gives you a chance to, if you have any degree of paperwork or computer inputting, that you now get a chance to do that, which, of course, is a major step towards closing any sale. Or you might try this sentence. I understand how you feel. In fact, I believe those words, Bert, I understand how you feel, are so important in the field of sales. Because what you're really saying to them is, hey, John, Mary, I'm not, you know, trying to push into anything. I can appreciate your hesitation. And then, of course, then you can add, you know, many of our happiest clients felt the same way when they first considered our product. And after seeing the benefits of the product, they found it to be a good solution for their needs. Which, again, is a real nice, gentle way of letting them feel like, hey, there's no pressure to do this. And then, of course, I also feel when you acknowledge their hesitation, instead of just pushing forward, you'll most often earn the right to guide them forward in the sales process. And there's really a big difference in your approach. In fact, in my training, Bert, I call it low-profile selling, more of an act like a lamb and sell like a lion instead of becoming too strong or aggressive, which really doesn't work in sales today.
You know, I love that. I love that idea, first of all, of trying to, you know, empathize and try to be in that customer's shoes, if you will. And as you said, kind of selling like a lamb, because nobody wants to be feel pressure. Nobody, you know, we've all probably experienced somebody who's trying to rush, you know, we call it rush a sale through. And
right.
It's not a pleasant experience.
No, and not only that, you'll very seldom build a referral business if you come across with pressure with people. You know, people used to say to me, Tom, you know, you sold 365 homes in a year, averaging one a day, which had back then had never been done. And they'd say, well, how do you do that without applying pressure? And, of course, I have had such a belief that if they like and trust you, you build a rapport, you become a master questioner and a great listener. It's just amazing how you can lead people to own something that's right for them. And that's important, too. I think that many people in sales don't have enough belief and conviction in what they're actually selling. I try when I teach financial services to tell the folks that are marketing any type of financial program, which could include some insurance, that they really have to own it themselves. Because if they can't look across the table with all sincerity, Bert, and say, you know, one of the happiest times in my life is when the first check I write every month is into my own debt freedom and financial independence program. Well, see, that adds not only strength, but you now you're doing what you're asking the purchaser to do. So there's a real truth in buy what you sell if you're going to sell it to others.
Absolutely. And I hope everybody picked up on that. If you have salespeople who aren't using your product, then you need to check that out and figure out why. I'm a big believer, just like you said, Tom, that if a salesperson is saying, hey, I bought this, and this is what I liked about it, this is how my family felt, then you start to have a little bit more trust. You are taking the salesperson more seriously. And he's not just a salesperson, even though he still is. He's also kind of giving you his testimonial, which makes a big difference.
Oh, it does. And sometimes, you know, you really need to mentally step back in the sales process. And when buyers hesitate, there is a reason. And, of course, your job as a master asker of questions is really to find out what the hesitation is. And, you know, sometimes you may just really need to go all the way back to the reestablishing rapport step before taking another step forward. And in most cases, I found that asking an open question gets most buyers talking about what the hesitation is and what you know what's holding them back. Then, of course, you can handle it. And that's, of course, what I think the real art form in the field of sales is turning no's into yeses in a gentle way to where everybody's happy, and then they send you referrals, and all of a sudden you're building a huge business.
Right. And I want to talk about this real quick, because it's the second time that you mentioned the word referrals. The difference between a customer, a one-time sale, if you will, and a relationship is when they start referring your customers. When they appreciate the work that you've done so much and they trust you so much that they're going to refer business to you, that to me really signifies that you reached the pinnacle of this relationship with this client. Most people are afraid to ask their customers for referral business.
Well, that's so true. In fact, I really believe if you are a true pro, master your trade, and you really love your product and have a good, fine quality product that's properly, it's really hard to say no if they are definitely qualified. And of course, my last year, I didn't have chance to prospect anymore because I was fortunate to have people that when they'd think of my product or service back then, which is real estate, they would think of me. And if they heard real estate or if they heard my name, they knew that I was the person that they should talk to about purchasing a property. So getting this reputation in the community, in your industry, to where people send business to you, boy, that's when the field of selling is really a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And you know what? And it's just not, you know, it's not just selling. That to me is when you, i.e. your company, is, that's when business becomes fun. Not just the selling aspect of it, but, you know, we all want to have our customers be our raving fans. And so, yes, absolutely, that does make selling tons of fun, and it makes business so much easier. And word starts to get out that, hey, Tom Hopkins is the real estate guy that I use, and I recommend him highly. You know, that's gotta be, what do you call it, such a fulfilling point in anybody's career. And again, here's the thing I'm trying to stress here is that you have to have a system for doing that. And one of those systems, I think the beginning of that system is, as you were saying, is selling with a gentle way, believing enough in your product that sometimes people do need to be persuaded or prodded to do the right thing for them.
Right.
And therefore, you're building this relationship that will last forever.
Well, and that's really what everybody in sales should look forward to. There's no funner business than selling when people know you, they want to send business to you, they love referring their friends and relatives to you, and that's when you really arrive. And you know, there are so many nuances in every step of the sales process that can make or break sales. And I guess, Bert, I've been teaching these for decades in my seminars and books and audios and videos, and now, of course, it's wonderful to have online courses.
Yeah.
And I hope when your listeners are ready to learn more, that they might go to tomhopkins.com or read my blog and take advantage of some of the training that we offer. Today, my business as far as seminars is so fortunate because people have heard my training, they read my books, and they know that what I teach is not just kind of fluff. It's real how-to technique that will help them make a lot more money, which, of course, is what we're in business for.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let me ask you this, Tom. How long did it take you to become an overnight success? You know, the story is the average overnight success takes about 20 years. you know, and so I'm asking you, how long did it take you when you felt as though you had, more or less arrived?
My first 6 months in real estate, I didn't do very well at all. Unfortunately, I found some trainers that taught me what to do and say. And then my second year, I started really making pretty darn good money for my age. I was only 19, just turning 20. And then all of a sudden, my next year, because of the referral base, it took off. And then the year that my fourth year was the year that I sold 365 homes in a year. And that, of course, kind of set the stage for me to become a speaker, because people read and they go, no one can sell a house a day average for a year with the complexities of a real estate sale. And so they started writing and calling and saying, come teach us. So it's been a fabulous life training people in the field of sales and marketing. I mean, just I couldn't be happier with the way my life has gone.
Yeah, you know what? And again, this is the thing that a lot of people miss, is that I hope you guys picked up on this. His first year, he didn't do very well. He had to get some mentoring, some training. He reached out. And when I was visiting your home, you showed me the gentleman who that you bought his audio recordings, actually on an LP, on a vinyl disc, for kind of dating both of us. But that you believe in training, that you believe in being, you know, of up-leveling your skills so you could do better. And here it is. It took you 4 or 5 years to start, you know, until your reputation started getting out there and people are asking you to come teach us, come speak to us. And so I wanted to put that out there that, you know, it takes time. And back to what you said earlier, you got to believe in what you're doing. You got to, you know, if you're going to what do you call it, to up-level your skills, you got to get help. You got to get some training. And now, as you mentioned earlier, with the advent of online training, anybody can go to tomhopkins.com and they can pick and choose what training they want. And there's tons of free material there as well. So anyway, Tom, so I want to say congratulations to you. You've done a remarkable job. You're still out there. You're still doing 30-plus seminars a year. People are still going crazy over your training. And as always, we appreciate you stopping by and sharing.
Well, always so good to be with you, Bert, and all the best to all of you folks. And keep listening to Bert and building to be the best.
I love it. I love it. Good stuff there from Tom Hopkins, international, globally recognized authority on selling and selling techniques, a master salesman. His two books that I would absolutely recommend is How to Master the Art of Selling, which is the thing that got me into selling and just really popped my eyes open. And then his latest bestseller, When Buyers Say No. This two books will change the way you run your business. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, folks, we are off and running. My next guest, Cheryl Ronk. Cheryl Ronk is president of the Michigan Society of Association Executives, MSAE, services over 1,200 members, resulting in it being one of the largest associations of its type in the nation. Cheryl represents the association sector on legislative initiatives at federal and state levels, and has successfully lobbied for needed modifications in the state of Michigan Nonprofit Corporation Act. Cheryl Ronk, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be on this show with you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. You know what? And I want to start off with talking about this, because I think this is so important. And I think a lot of people who wonder whether or not they should be involved in an association, I want to talk about this. The fact that your association lobbies for, I'll say, you know, modifying laws or initiatives or getting things out there as a solo business owner, it's very difficult to have our voice heard. But by joining an association like yours, we're able to get representation and really get help and get our voices heard. And I think a lot of people just do not understand the importance of this.
Right. You know what? There is an association for everything.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is, in this country, in the United States, we're one of the few countries where really we see the value of associations. And by joining together and borrowing brilliance, we're able to improve the industry or the profession in which we work in. I think it all started back in the guilds, back when we first came over on ships, and how we needed to work together to make the gains that needed to be done, and that we're still doing that today. So it is true that there is an association for everything. Now, you probably don't know, and your listeners probably don't know about the Association of Associations, because we really support those groups that support the industries and professions that your listeners are in. But there is our organization, which supports the association sector. And, you know, there are just amazing things that are getting accomplished by this association sector. And it's very impressive, because as a business owner, what you can do is find a group that will help support your needs in a specific area. And so instead of recreating, you can borrow and leverage what's already created.
Yes, I love that idea of leveraging. Talk about a massive, what do you call it, time saver. And again, people sometimes overlook the importance of these, of leveraging this power. All right, so let's talk about this. Tell us a little bit more about MSAE. You mentioned that it's an association for association professional and what do you call it, associations and industry. And
yep.
So you guys support, if I'm a member here of the Arizona Small Business Association, the Arizona Small Business Association is probably a member of the local chapter of the SAE, and that's where they go to get support and training.
Right. So there's an association for that. You know, that's part of our phrase. So there's probably a Chamber of Commerce, a Small Business Association, a National Federation of Independent Businesses, something that really supports that business environment in Arizona. And then that organization would likely get their support from the Arizona Society of Association Executives. I am a big component of having people look at multi-levels for joining. I think you should join at a local level. That could be your Chamber of Commerce. That could be Rotary. It could be Kiwanis. It could be Toastmasters. But something that's giving you that local connection. So that we just heard from Tom Hopkins about his success. Well, you know what? The prospects that he got was not only within his own field, but others. So something locally where you're going to be able to build that business is a key component. Then statewide. Once you get into statewide, you're going to get more into more sophisticated training, which is something that Tom mentioned. You're also going to be then represented within the state legislature. The legislature looks at things, and they're always changing things. For every group, there are some things that they probably need to have changed, and then there are some things that you don't want to have changed because that could impact you negatively. So the association world usually keeps an eye on that so that they are monitoring what's going on to support the industry. And then I recommend that they be involved at a national or an international level. And that's usually where best practices, where research is coming into play, so that instead of doing your own data collection, you might be able to find out some data that is coming from the national. The other thing is sometimes there's some group buying that occurs at the state or national level that will give you a cost advantage for some of the things that you purchase. So I have to admit, I just had dinner with a number of people from the Michigan Dental Association. They have a program for gloves. Now, this is not something that you and I need, but if we were a dentist, I will tell you, I just sat in a dentist's chair about 10 days ago, and during the time that dentist saw me, he had 3 different pairs of gloves on. So think about the number of gloves they go through. The Dental Association has a group buying program where they will supply gloves at a discount. In fact, I think they mentioned to me that they save the average dentist about $4,000 a year by going through their program. And the other thing that the program does, if I understand this correctly, is they monitor when the doctor normally needs gloves, and they put it on an automatic shipment.
Nice.
So that it's not, how are we doing on gloves? It's just automatically, here's your next supply of gloves. So those group buying programs can be very beneficial. And in the small business world, one of the things to really look at is insurance. Do you have the insurance coverage that you would need, and are you able to get that at a discount from an organization? There also could be some payroll services that are offered collectively at a discount because the marketing is so much more streamlined for whoever that provider is.
Yeah, I love that. I love the idea, again, something that a lot of us do not understand is this ability to buy in bulk or group buying, and that's such a neat thing to take advantage of. You know, so as far as the MSAE, how long have you guys been there in the Michigan area? How long have you guys been helping?
Yeah, so we've been here about 80 years, 84 years the organization has existed. I've been here 27 years, which is kind of long, too, and I was the first full-time staff person for the organization.
That's cool.
It is cool, and we now represent about 90% of all the associations with a staff of six or more. We're working on going to some of the smaller entities. There's a number of associations that are managed by one person. So that's where our growth is. And some of the things that we do is very few people come out of school to be an association exec, but it is a profession. So we work with people no matter where they come from. Much of it is from government affairs, from advertising, from marketing, or just general management.
Sure.
We work with them to make sure that they have the skills and the knowledge to be able to be successful in the sector. So we focus a lot on professional development, not only for the CEOs of the associations, but also for their staff and for their board members. So the one unique thing about associations that's different from the corporate world is that the members own the organization. The members elect a board of directors, and the board of directors hires the CEO. Within that structure, the CEO needs to make sure that they understand about working for a board and how to maximize that opportunity.
Yeah, I like the way you said that. CEO has to understand that he's working for a board. Yes.
Yeah. See, the one thing about an association is the members own it. And so the members are the ones who can create what they need. So based on what's happening in the world or in their state or their town, they can look at what do they want to do for their image, what do they want to do to advance the community, what do they want to do to make the sales that they make. So mentoring, you know, Tom mentioned that, mentoring is a key part for good success.
Right.
Well, an association is a perfect place to either find a mentor if you're new in the profession or to be a mentor once you've gotten to that point where you're a pretty dynamic leader. So it's finding, who's ahead of you and then continue to keep that pipeline going and to mentor an emerging professional.
I like that because sometimes people forget that one of the most fulfilling things that we do in our lives is to give back.
Mm-hmm.
And having that opportunity to mentor other people is a great way to give back. It's also a great way to re-energize yourself. And you know, sometimes when you've been doing something for, 15, 20, 30 years, you don't get excited about the nuances because we're so accustomed to it. Then you're mentoring somebody new, and they get excited about everything, which reinvigorates your enthusiasm.
Right. Well, in today's world, I need those mentees to help mentor me on all these things with social media and how the web is really used. And so I agree that it is important to give back. But I will tell you that I have sometimes gotten more in return than I ever dreamt I would. So, yeah, it is part of being being part of the community. And that's really what associations are all about, and bettering the community. The other thing to mention is if you have a product or service that really has a niche market, you could market through an association. So, okay, I have one company, for example, who almost all of their work is done with associations. So they're a software developer, and they have focused in on the association sector as their niche. As a result, they're going to market through us because I know the marketplace. I've got the list. And we have the clout to be able to say, if we recommend them, that they're a viable organization. I just had the opportunity to talk to all the local realtor execs here in Michigan, and it was interesting. So some of the people that were there working with these execs were companies like Zillow, and the companies that do all the security locks on doors that you put in with a passcode, or now they're using your phone. So if you think if that's your product, and it's going to be on doors of homes that are up for sale, who do you want to market that to? You want to market that to realtors.
Right.
So where are you going to go? You want to go to the local board of realtors, and that way you have the connection with all those realtors. So sometimes if you think about what you're doing, it could be that there's a ready-made marketing environment for your services. And an association might be the best opportunity to hit that target market.
Yes. I love that. It's a, yeah, if you start thinking about it like that, what a nice shortcut. If you want to reach a bunch of realtors or a bunch of dentists, you can do that. You could take a, what we call a nice little shortcut by getting involved with that association.
Right. And there's an association for everything.
I love that. I love
unique...
that you started off that way. There's an association for that, right?
The most unique one I have here in Michigan is the Mushroom Hunters Association.
No way.
Yeah, but you know what? If you think about it, Bert, if you and I were going to go hunting for mushrooms, we want to make sure we know what we're doing, and that association could help us. But there is. So, you know, there's an association for nursery and landscape. There's an association for dry cleaners. There's an association for property managers. There's an association of road builders. Whatever it is, there's an association.
Funny. Yeah, you know, I'm always amazed, not only about discovering a new association, but that, you know, it's not only a niche association, but, of course, they have a trade publication, right? And I'm always amazed at all the different things that are out there. There is literally an association, as you say, for that. There's somebody that has a group of that. You know, I saw the Association of Staging Professionals. I saw that whole thing develop. It just started to make sense, and I started telling people, watch, there's going to be an association developed, and of course now there's two or three different associations that develop that space. But it was kind of neat to watch it go from a few people doing it to a few thousand, to an association, to now we have annual meetings. It is just kind of a cool thing to watch.
Right, right. And the whole reason why it happened is so that you could learn from each other. There's something about getting together with people who do the similar kind of work. So in some ways, you know, really what you're doing is you're getting together with some of your competitors. But what you're doing is collectively looking at how can we advance the profession or the industry. How can we make sure that we are doing the best that we can do to customers? And so they're usually not only able to borrow that brilliance, but to solve problems together that they would not have been able to do on their own.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Let's back up and talk about this, you know, real quick. We all hit stumbling blocks. We all have a problem that we need a solution to. And this is a fantastic way to collaborate, to kind of put a mastermind together and maybe solve a problem.
Right. Absolutely. So I'm thinking about, when I go and get my hair done, you know, the systems that are there at that beauty salon or were all created by a tech company who saw
right.
the opportunity and worked with the industry to say, you know, what is it that you need? So now, you know, you can go right online usually and find your appointment. Well,
yes.
to make that all happen didn't happen in a vacuum. So it was that people saw, oh, we need to do this, and then collectively they created that solution. So, you know, that's in great part what associations are all about. And it's not always technology solutions, although I'm hearing more and more about that type of thing. Sometimes it's marketing. So to have an opportunity for blanket marketing, well, the milk producers, you know, there's been some great ads about, you know, drinking milk, the milk mustache that we've seen in all the magazines. That's collectively from a group that wants you to understand that milk is healthy and they are hopeful that you are drinking milk. And there's
right.
all sorts of groups like, yeah. So instead of having, you know, hi, we're XYZ Dairy, you know, buy our milk, collectively they've gone in and said, buy milk.
Right.
And that's another example of the association model going in to benefit a group collectively. So instead of everyone marketing, you know, buy now, you know, there's still some of that, you know, buy
right,
milk
right.
from quality dairy, but the main emphasis is buy milk.
Yes.
And so they collectively have pooled resources to say we're better together than we are alone.
Right.
It's
and,
really
and
cool.
Again, this, and again, this talks about the other stuff that we've talked about, which is the leveraging the power of numbers, right? Everybody's pitching in to run those milk ads. They're also brainstorming, hey, how do we get more people to buy milk? So all this comes into play, what we're talking about. And, you know, one dairy farmer by himself could not afford to do that. But a collective, now they're going to say, hey, this makes sense for all of us.
Right. Absolutely. Yep. So some of the areas where associations really excel is in the regulatory area, you know, making
right.
sure that the policies and procedures coming from the government are making it so that the consumer is safe, but not so restrictive that they can't do business. Looking at what laws are coming into play and, you know, what they can do. Solving problems together. So I'm thinking about, you know, here I am in Michigan, and I've just had an opportunity to talk with the Association of all the pediatricians in the state. Their main emphasis right now is Flint and what happened up there with the water. How can they make sure that the children are getting what they need and are as safe as they can be in getting the care? So
right.
In a time of crisis, you know, it's usually an association that sometimes will step up and really help with that. Getting assistance with marketing, which we talked a little bit, and then professional development, which is something that Tom was talking quite a bit about. But, you know, when there are new developments, how you're going to hear about those is usually from your association. You know, if there's something new in the association world, I'm not going to be able to read about it in USA Today. It's
right.
just too narrow of a market to be able to have that information there. So that's a role that an association often plays. And then that whole connections piece. You know, Tom was talking about prospects and, you know, getting those from referrals from other people. And so having connections is a huge part of any business that you're in. And it's getting together to share who knows who and for those referrals. And we talked a little bit about research and statistics, but there is a lot of that happens. So I'm reminded of some of the groups that will go in and do market studies for a product or service. So Photo Marketing International was a large association here in Michigan, and in great part what they would do is they would do all the research for all the camera companies on what people wanted. So instead of each of the companies, you know, Kodak and other photo companies coming up with their own research, they collectively did all that market research and the analysis of what customers were looking for. And then, you know, collective bargaining, some of the collective discussions. So MSAE will have associations that will be on both sides of the table. So the Michigan Education Association will do negotiations with the Michigan School Board Association. And both of those are entities that are making sure that there is good work conditions collectively for the people that are providing the services. So that's an important element that associations can bring to the table as well.
I love it. Cheryl Ronk, I want to say thank you so much for stopping by. We're out of time. But again, if you're in the Michigan area, I want to encourage you to check out msae.org. And there's a national chapter. So if you're in a different state or city or whatever, and you want to check out if there is an association of associations for your neck of the woods, they can go where?
ASAE, the American Society of Association Executives. And that site, ASAE and the center.org, have a list of all the SAEs. But I'll tell you, you know what? With these search engines, you can find just about anything. So what you could do is go in and say, you know, I'm looking for the Association of Associations in Arizona, and up it will pop. But if you're in a specific industry, you could type in whatever that is. So, you know, I'm looking for the Pencil Association, and probably up it'll come. Remember that not only do you want to be a member, but you want to be a connected member and make the most of it.
I love that. A connected member. Absolutely. What's the point of joining if you're not going to go, right? Cheryl Ronk, thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to have you back again.
Great. Thank you.
You bet. Good stuff there about leveraging your association's association, right? Your association is probably connected in a lot of different ways. Cheryl gave great examples, and you're probably not using it as well as you could. Think about that. Are you throwing money away? Should you get more involved? We'll be right back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase Mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, welcome back. My next guest, Julie Jakubek, is a, has been in insurance. Let me try this again. My next guest, Julie Jakubek, has been in the insurance as an agency owner for 20 years. The agency of Julie Jakubek is located in the mid-century modern building in the corner of Thomas Road and 47th Street here in a lovely Phoenix area. She has a team of 6 licensed staff to help her with a wide range of insurance, including personal, business, and financial needs. Julie enjoys helping out in the community and is focused on giving back. She's on the board of directors of the Arizona Council of Economic Education for the past 7 years. ACEE teaches teachers how to teach their students about finance and the economy. Julie Jakubek, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you very much for having me.
You bet. Hey, you know what? I'm excited to have you here. I know a lot of people don't get that excited about insurance, but I think, and you probably know this better than I do, I think a lot of people aren't well-versed in insurance, and sometimes they don't have enough coverage, and of course they never find out what their coverage is until they have a claim, and all of a sudden, no, sorry, that's not covered.
That is correct. Make sure you have the correct coverage. And the way to do that is either be an expert in insurance or hire someone that you know is an expert that can help you make the coverage choices to fit your life.
Right. And here's the thing that I learned kind of the hard way. Well, not I should say I was fortunate to learn it through somebody else's terrible experience. And that is, you know, when you're 20, maybe you don't have a bunch of stuff that's worth a whole lot, so you're not that concerned about it. And so, you know, $2,500 worth of renter insurance coverage may be all you need. But as we start accumulating things, we need to then update our policies because before you know it, now you have stuff that's worth a lot more money, but you got old coverage.
Or have coverage at all. So like if you have an apartment, if you're renting, you want to make sure that you've got coverage for your personal items. The apartment complex or the person who owns the house that you're renting from has coverage for themselves, but that doesn't cover you. You want to cover your personal items in case there's a fire or a pipe burst or a theft or vandalism, something like that. So it's very important to have that coverage. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I want to clarify this. So the apartment complex that I'm renting catches on fire. All my stuff is burnt up. The apartment complex owes me nothing.
Correct.
So if I don't have my own insurance, I'm basically SOL.
You are SOL for two reasons. One is you won't have any items left, the stuff that burned up, and you'll be on the streets because you'll have no place to live.
Gotcha. All right. So with renter's insurance, I have my property protected. I'll be able to at least get some of those items back, if not all of them. And then what about a place to stay? Does renter's insurance cover that kind of emergency? Do I get a hotel stipend for a couple of days? How does that work?
Yes. So the insurance company will most likely give you up to 12 months additional living expense while your place is being reconstructed.
Gotcha. Wow. That alone is a big deal. And renter's insurance is fairly affordable. I know because I have renter's insurance because we're currently renting a home while looking to buy our new one. And it's, you know, even for all the junk that we have, it's a very reasonable rate.
Yeah, you're looking at about $15 to $20 a month depending on your items and different coverages you have.
Gotcha. All right. So let's talk about this. I own a condo versus renting a place. So now I own a condo. The HOA has insurance. Is this similar to the apartment complex? Do I still need my own insurance too?
Yes. And the reason you need your own insurance is for the same reason in the apartment. You need your personal items covered. But then also, the condo usually covers bare walls, so you need to cover your upgrades inside your unit. Otherwise, your unit won't be taken care of. So you'll have no kitchen countertops, you'll have no toilets, you'll have no sinks, there's all those things that need to be covered on your side. And also the HOA usually has a pretty hefty deductible. So even before that's taken care of, you need to pay $2,500, $5,000, $10,000 before their insurance will even come into play. So that's why making sure you have the correct condo insurance is really important.
Yes. And I hope that people, you guys are not tuning this out. You don't think that it's going to happen to you. I guarantee you, somebody listening right now will have an insurance claim come up within the next week or two or three. It's just a numbers game. Let's talk about this. Replacement cost versus actual cash value. What do these terms mean?
Okay, so actual cash value means your TV. So an insurance company will just give you the same TV. Replacement cost means they'll replace the item. So you have an old TV. If you have actual cash value, you'll get paid pennies on the dollar. If you have a replacement cost, then they'll replace it with a brand new 2016 TV.
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha. So just to feed this back to you. So I have this 10-year-old TV. I bought it, let's say when I bought it brand new, I bought it for $1,000, but now I've had it for 10 years, so it might be worth like $100. If I have replacement value, they're going to replace it. If I have cash value, they're just going to give me $100.
Correct.
Big difference. And so these are some of the terms that really, when you guys are going through your insurance, what do you call it, application, this is the kind of stuff that you need to know and ask questions about, because it's going to make a big difference. Now, let me ask you this. The difference between having replacement cost versus actual cost as far as my premiums, is it a huge difference or a kind of a nominal thing?
Very nominal. A couple dollars a month difference.
Wow. So just for a few dollars more, you can get your stuff replaced versus getting the depreciated amount there, which is a huge thing. All right, so let's talk about this, because this is really prevalent. When I was growing up, if you ran your business out of your home, you were frowned upon. But today, just about everybody runs a small business out of their home. What type of insurance should I carry?
Sometimes your homeowner's insurance will cover you, but your business contents is not covered. So you need to cover your business contents on a business policy. You can get a home-based business policy. We do many of those for $220 a year. It's not very expensive. And then it also covers liability. Let's say somebody comes over for your business, slips and falls, and wants to sue you. You've got that coverage, too, on a business policy.
Wow. And it's only like $200 or $300 a year. Again, it's something worth checking out with your professional insurance person. And this really, I think this is super important. If you do have people coming to visit your home, it may happen where they accidentally do a slip and fall or whatever, especially if you're dealing with physical goods. Maybe they're bending over to pick something up and boom, they're hurt now. Let's talk about this. I had a friend of mine who... somebody broke into their home and stole their high-end Louis Vuitton stuff. I think I forgot how much it was. It was some ridiculous amount of money for these purses. And her insurance, I guess she only had like $2,500 to cover some of these items. And so do I need specialized insurance to cover things like my expensive jewelry or my expensive handbags, things of that nature?
Well, handbags are in the category with clothes, so you wouldn't need to have extra coverage for that. But for jewelry, on the most policies, there's only $1,000 or $2,000 worth of coverage. So if you have an expensive wedding ring or a Rolex watch, especially if you use them every day, schedule them on the policy, because then they're covered for items that are not normally covered, like mysterious disappearance. If somebody decides they want to take it off your body, you know, like if they're holding you up, or if you drop it down the garbage disposal. There's certain things that if you schedule it on the policy, they're covered, when a normal policy, it either wouldn't be covered at all or be very limited in coverage.
And I like that term, mysterious disappearance.
That means you lost it and you have no idea where it is.
Yeah,
and that's normally not covered. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I could see that, absolutely. All right, so when you say schedule it, you mean make sure that it is written down, it has its own little clause, if you will, or it's itemized. Hey, I have this $10,000 ring. I want to make sure that's covered. I have... a collection of antique chairs. I want to make sure those are covered, that kind of stuff.
Itemized is a very good word. We can schedule things with appraisals or receipts, recent appraisals or receipts. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Now, let me ask you this. Speaking of, what do you call it, mysterious disappearance. Let's say that you're out traveling, you have a nice camera, and it, you know, somebody breaks in your car while you're having lunch and takes your camera. What is that covered under? Is that auto? Is that rental? Is that home?
Okay, well, then it's not mysterious disappearance. If somebody breaks the window into your car, so that's a covered loss. That's theft. That's under your home insurance or your renter's insurance or your condo insurance, depending on which item you have for your property. But yes, it is a covered loss. but you leave it on the park bench and somebody just takes it, that's mysterious disappearance. It would be covered if it was scheduled.
Interesting. And again, what I'm taking away from our conversation today, Julie, is that, you know, A, we need to know what we're protected, and sometimes it needs to be written down or scheduled or itemized so you know exactly that this thing is covered for all these possible situations. A lot of us think that, hey, I got my insurance, I'm good to go, and that's not always the case.
Correct. It helps to sit down with someone who knows insurance, a good insurance agent, that you can play out scenarios. What happens if this happened? How would I be covered? And then you know, in case there is a loss, that, okay, this is the number I called, this is how it will be covered. And then you have that sense of peace of mind.
Yes, absolutely. And again, from my personal experience and the little time that we spoke today, you know, making sure that you have the right coverage isn't a huge difference in your premium. Sometimes it's just a few dollars, maybe a couple hundred bucks a year. It's not going to be a massive amount, but the phrase that you just said, it's the peace of mind that we know that we're covered, that we're going to be okay when life happens to us. I love it. Julie Jakubek, is that right? Did I get your name close?
Julie Jakubek.
She's an Allstate agent, and I want to say thank you so much for stopping by and sharing your time with us today.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You bet. Good stuff there about you and your property, your insurance. Do you know what you need? Do you have it covered? Do you have it updated? Man, today's show has been good. And as always, we appreciate you being here. You make the dream come true. Thank you so much. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.